This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming my friend and colleague Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, and we're immediately to Seoul, South Korea, welcoming Steve Yates of the Heritage Foundation, who's in town to observe these moments before the presidential election, a snap election on June 3rd. The event that dominates the headlines in Reuters in these hours is a debate. South Korea's presidential candidates face off in fiery debate. Steve, a very good day to you. Fiery debate. Is that unusual in Korean politics to be less than polite and accusatory in a presidential debate? The scale of it looks like a game show, the way they arrange the set. However, that doesn't tell us what they said. Good evening to you, Steve.
Well, good evening, John. At least in my experience, South Koreans are very, very good at drama, and their politics often are fueled with high drama. All anyone has to do is look at the disposition of nearly everyone who has occupied the office of president, and you can find all kinds of fun activities that usually don't end well for those that go through it. But that the sort of theater of the debate, the intensity of the debate, didn't surprise me. And also sort of the disposition on policy didn't surprise me, but it disappoints me in the following sense. The main opposition candidate offered a remark that suggested that South Korea should not be fully committed to its alliance with the United States, that it must have relations with the United States and Japan, but it also needs to balance its equities with Russia and China. That kind of equidistant stance is common among the opposition going back a couple of decades. But especially in current circumstances, I think it's a very unflattering position to try to take in the middle of global tariff negotiations and a CCP upsetting the status quo across the Indo-Pacific.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Lee Jae-myung of the Democratic Party of Korea, the leftist, hates the United States, hates Japan, loves China, loves North Korea. He would break the alliance if he could get away with it, which he probably can't. This is going to be a very difficult time for the U.S. going forward. What do you think Washington should do about a person who we have a treaty alliance with who is going to undermine us at every turn?
Well, it is a challenge, and I would encourage my friends in the White House and across government to go back and look at what previous administrations did when having to maintain an alliance with when their elected leader in South Korea was acting in ways that were contrary to where our nation wanted to go. This might be a different point in time, different people, different things at play in some ways. In the past, we always focused primarily on tensions with the North. That still remains, but the big X factor today is revisionism by Beijing and alliances trying to work to rebalance and reboot in some way to be stronger. I think that we have to look at a president of the United States actively communicating past his counterpart to the corporate leadership in South Korea, which is very, very powerful, and the people of South Korea, and try to engage in much more effective public diplomacy. It's a sort of thrown away term and concept in some ways, but I think in this bilateral relationship, it'll be very, very important to get past the personal politics.
Understanding the culture, I do not, Steve, so I ask this question without full information. It's 75 years in June since the launch of the attack against Seoul and South Korea by elements of the Communist Party out of Moscow, certainly sympathetic with the Communist Party out of Beijing. 75 years. Is it all gone? No memory whatsoever?
Well, John, in my sense, it's not dissimilar to younger generation in America and elsewhere. Across Asia, the younger generation has less emotional tie to things of the past. But oddly, they can get riled up when people play political warfare games. And so this idea of pushing back against Uncle Sam and raising history issues with Japan, the younger generation in South Korea doesn't have that lived experience. They're much more distracted with K-pop and the internet and short form video and all of the things that a lot of kids are taken up into. But they can be manipulated by these political warfare tools. The CCP is very good at it. And the opposition here has to be very careful not to echo or fall into that kind of political manipulation the CCP is engaged in.
Gordon, you have a question.
Steve, the most leftist segment of the South Korean population are those in their 50s and 60s, those who went through the democracy movement of the 1980s, who blame the United States for supporting hardline leaders in Seoul. You have a younger generation, though. There are leftists among them, but many of them believe that their country is South Korea. It's not Korea. And therefore, they're not aligned with the leftists who believe their country is should be unified with North Korea. You talk about President Trump having to look past the new president, who presumably will be elected. He's done that before. When he was president in his first term, the president of South Korea was Moon Jae-in, who was a leftist, who was not as ruthless and determined as the leftist who was about to be elected. But President Trump did do that at one stage in his first term.
Well, I think that the economic debate is actually an opportunity. People focus on tariffs and focus on the tensions among negotiators in having to, you know, why was an OECD country a reliable ally given these high tariffs when the issue really should be more China, et cetera, et cetera. But really, I think that the broader economic base in South Korea knows that its future is tied more toward the American consumer market, and also that the encroachment on intellectual property and monopolizing supply chains is not something that China uniquely does to the United States. They've done it to their neighbors, too. And so I think I completely agree that the younger people are much more focused on their country in the South, their culture in the South, and their opportunity going forward. They need to have faith that they have the good high-tech jobs or other opportunities in their economy. And that's basically what President Trump is driving if the body politic in South Korea will engage. And I think President Trump has some opportunity there, and it'll be reinforced by Taiwan and Japan engaging in that conversation, too. Korea will not want to be left behind.
The legislature, does it have a voice in subsequent policy? Presuming the Blue Palace, the Blue House, is in the hands of those who are heavily influenced by Beijing, is there a pushback anywhere in the apparatus?
Well, if the opposition leader wins the presidency, and the polling suggests he's on a smooth glide path to doing so, we'll see how that turns out. He'll have an operative majority in the legislature to be able to do a number of things, but it's not a runaway majority. And the legislature has always been a little bit tumultuous when there are big trade agreements or things economic. The one thing the Koreans can count on is that there will be debates and there will be protests on how these things shake out. But it's a really, I think Gordon framed it right. There is this class of generations, the oldest that were committed to the alliance and remember the war, the middle that protested the United States, and the younger that want to see a different future. And that legislature is going to have to respond to them.
Gordon, you have a question.
Steve, the National Assembly and the Democratic Party of Korea, the leftists, are about 8 or 10 votes shy of a 2/3 majority. 2/3 is relevant because that's what you need to send a constitutional amendment to the South Korean public for ratification. What do you see Yi Jae-myung, if he is indeed elected, trying to do in terms? I know that he wants to change the 5-year single term to 2 4-year terms. But what else do you think that he might try and do?
Well, they say they, of course, responding to recent news, they want to set more conditions on presidential authority to declare martial law. I think that it's a worthy structural question whether this one term, 5-year approach has been good for Korean leadership and responsiveness to their voters. There's something to be said for having someone elected who has the potential for re-election, having to be mindful of where voters are during that, at least that first term. And that might have a moderating influence on how far leaders can go and how far their opposition is willing to go. So I think that's a reform, regardless of who's putting forward, is probably worthy of consideration. The broader challenge, though, he also talks about kind of green energy and those kinds of technologies being the way of the future. That is exactly the supply chain that China has monopolized in a profound way, regardless of what someone's theology is about this order of priority. And so he'll face some challenges on how to lead economically if he wants to balance against the United States in some ways, maintain some sense of tension with Japan, and have his economy increasingly dependent on supply chains in China if you want to go the way of the Green New Deal approach. So I think that's a challenging brew. He might win his election, but he'll have a tough time governing.
Steve Yates, Heritage Foundation in Seoul, South Korea, awaiting the election. Gordon Chang.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.